Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by AstraZeneca, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jessica S. Donnington, MD, MSCR, and Brendan M. Stiles, MD, about surgical perspectives on key lung cancer treatment developments. Dr. Donnington is a professor of surgery and chief of the section of thoracic surgery in the Department of Surgery at the University of Chicago in Illinois. Dr. Stiles is chief of thoracic surgery and surgical oncology, as well as the associate director of surgical oncology at Montefiore Einstein Comprehensive Cancer Center in the Bronx, New York, where he is also a professor in the Department of Cardiothoracic and Vascular Surgery, a professor in the Department of Oncology and Medical Oncology, and a professor in the Department of Medicine in Oncology and Hematology. In part one of our exclusive two-part interview, Drs. Donnington and Stiles discussed how the findings from the Phase 3 ADAURA trial with adjuvant osimertinib have changed thoracic surgery expectations, the potential surgical implications of the Phase 3 ALENA trial with adjuvant alectinib, and the importance of early-stage molecular testing in lung cancer. Hello, and welcome to Onc Live On Air. Today, we are joined by Dr. Stiles and Dr. Donnington. How are you both?
Great.
Great.
Happy to have you with us today. Let's start with a brief introduction.
So I'm Jessica Donnington. I'm a general thoracic surgeon and chief of thoracic surgery at the University of Chicago.
Hey, and I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm a thoracic surgeon as well, and I'm the chief of thoracic surgery at Montefiore Einstein.
Today, we are going to be walking through some of the recent neoadjuvant and adjuvant trials in early stage lung cancer and how those data have affected surgical practices. So I do want to start with the ADAURA trial. Initially, we saw the improvement in disease-free survival, and at ASCO this year, we saw the improvement in overall survival. So how would you say perceptions and expectations for surgeons have changed since that readout?
So I think ADAURA was the first time as surgeons that we really got excited about, you know, biomarkers and targeted therapy. We had watched what had happened in metastatic disease. We suddenly saw survivors and, you know, prolonged rates of control. And it did kind of change how we worked up a lot of our patients, because suddenly we needed to know whether they had this biomarker or not. Since it was, you know, initially and it's still only used in the adjuvant setting, it's not like for a DUR alone, I need to have biomarker testing. But it definitely is the first real signal in early stage disease that we have to be thinking about biomarker testing, because we can really curate our care very specifically to our patients' needs.
Yeah, and I'm just as excited. I think it really is a win for our patients. And I think Dr. Donnington's points about talking to our patients about it, about the need for adjuvant therapy, about what we're going to test for, is really, really critical. We were all super excited when we saw the disease-free survival. And I think the overall survival that was reported this year just reaffirmed our own beliefs that this is a drug that really works. There's a lot of questions about timing and what happens at the tail end. But we saw such a clear survival signature, not just for the advanced stage patients, but even a signature for the 1Bs that I was really impressed with. So now I think it's something I really have to talk about with a wide range of our surgical patients.
Right. And similar to the metastatic patients with EGFR mutations, this is a very motivated population. They are very educated. They will do a lot to improve their outcome. So having this option for them is really something I think we all appreciate. But it does drive home that every, you know, 1B patient and above, when they're resected, you have to send off some kind of molecular test, or else you'll never know.
Now, in terms of that molecular testing, where do you stand on the use of tissue versus liquid biopsy?
It's much trickier in early stage disease. I think we can expect to see a signal in advanced disease in stage four, and it's certainly moved into the frontline clinical setting there. I don't think that we're there yet in early stage locally advanced disease. I think it's tempting to start thinking about it and trying. But for us, tissue is so much a part of what we do and a part of staging that I think the idea of tissue is easier. Most of these patients that we're talking about are going to get a biopsy early on, and they're going to get nodal stage. And that's become such a part of stratification for patients for neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapies. I don't really think it's a problem. We also have a little bit of time built into getting patients to surgery and the time for workup for surgery. So I think we're mostly tissue people. We always have been. That doesn't preclude us going more and more to liquid in the future.
I agree 100%. Liquid has been great in stage four. The technology is just not sensitive enough for early stage disease. I just don't think it's reliable. And I think it's actually more about tissue than ever in early stage disease. You know, you used to be able to kind of take a 5-centimeter tumor and who cared if you had tissue or not, but now you need tissue. It's really made our interventional pulmonary colleagues a much more important part of the team. And we need to make sure when we go in to get a biopsy, we get a good one. We need a lot of tissue. We need a lot of cells to do everything we need. It's no longer just lung cancer, even for surgeons.
And perhaps even more so important with the readout of the ALENA data with adjuvant alectinib at ESMO this year. Dr. Donnington, what were your thoughts after seeing those results?
So part of me was kind of, I didn't want to be too hopeful after ADURA, but it looks like, you know, that the signal is even stronger. And again, it's so exciting. This is, again, a population that, you know, when these patients recur, if they recur after surgery, it's really devastating. These are young, healthy patients. So having, you know, something to offer them is amazing. Like I said, I think the readout was stronger than I was anticipating, and I think it's great. I haven't had a patient on yet, but I'm waiting because I had a I had one not so long ago who I wanted to give it to. Maybe we can give it 3 or 4 months late.
Yeah, and I agree completely. I think it's really exciting for patients. I think we all sort of thought it was going to read out and look great, but we're all really, really happy when we saw how strong the signal was with a DFS of 0.24. It's also pretty compelling for patients, I think, to be chemo-free, right?
And I was going to say, the chemo-free part of it.
Yeah, exactly right. And a little bit different design from ADURA. And I think one can debate the benefits of chemotherapy, which we know has a survival advantage in the adjuvant setting. But I think that, you know, patients, I think, and as we can increasingly talk about patient quality of life, and we talked about that a little bit in the context of the FLAURA trial, it's important, right? And some patients don't want chemotherapy. So I think that this really gives that option. It really solidifies ALK is a really important pathway to rule out before neoadjuvant therapy and to rule in when we're thinking about adjuvant therapy.
For practices who are looking to adopt genetic testing in the early stage setting, are there any specific processes at your institutions that you found have been really successful?
I'll say I like to call it comprehensive molecular testing. I do find that the term genetic testing sometimes gets confusing for our patients. Now I worry about them thinking about inheritable diseases. And so we try to talk about molecular testing, and you know, that includes inclusive in my mind of PD-L1. We have really revamped this and thought about this here, and I think lots of places do reflex, and we've tried to do reflex, and I think we have it now. There's still some times when it slips through the cracks, but I really think one has to be thinking about it from the point of care, which means getting the biopsy people involved, and that's maybe the pulmonologists. In some institutions, it may be the interventional radiologist, but those people have to be thinking about it so that they have the pathologist thinking about it when they send it there, so it can happen from that first biopsy.
I agree 100%, as much as, you know, surgeons and medical oncologists and radiation oncologists need this information. Getting it and making sure everybody, every patient who needs it gets it, is a team sport. And you absolutely need to fully have your biopsy team, whether that's IP or IR, on board and recognizing the importance. And you have to have your pathologist on board. And we'll see it happen, you know, probably once a month. We'll be going through the path and someone will say, you know, the moleculars weren't ordered on this. And they're like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, but so if no one's looking, then it's a month goes by instead of 3 days and then you're in trouble. I do think this is one of the areas of lung cancer care that I wish we could speed up and somehow get more uniform across platforms. It's still kind of all over the place.
Even with reflex testing, there'll be one or two cases that seem to slip through it. For whatever reason, it don't happen. And it makes everybody crazy. But that really, I think, emphasizes the benefit of the tumor board. And really, we, I think, both think that all of these cases that are, you know, above stage 1A at least need to be discussed with a multidisciplinary tumor board so that these discussions can be had so that there's multiple people to check that. That's a lot harder at community programs. It may have different people in different places and have a tough time getting together to do this. But the system needs some check to ensure that all these appropriate biomarkers are getting tested for.
And as a way to share knowledge, that's the other thing. Like, as we ended, everyone was all excited. Our pulmonologist, so like, ALENA what? And I'm like, ALENA trial, didn't you know? And they're like, no. you know, so we kind of talk about it. And I'm, oh, now they're even more excited. My tissue's more valuable.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by AstraZeneca. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.